So just before we get started, why don't we do a quick round of introductions? I see a few folks are new. So just to kick it off, everyone, my name is Nancy Nguyen, chairing the Social Impact Special Interest Group. In my other full-time job, I'm the founder of Echolung. We're developing a peer-to-peer transactive energy platform based on blockchain solutions. Jim, do you want to go next?
Sure. Good morning, everyone. My name is Jim Couples. I'm the vice chair in the group, and I am the principal at a company called Terrapin Data, and we work on technology solutions related to agriculture, and we use blockchain for many of those projects.
I'll go next. My name's Alicia Noel, and Jim invited me. I'm MD at a company called Cultivati, and I do research into food supply chain traceability, specifically interested in how blockchain's being used, especially around Asia. Another hat I wear is at Frontiers in Blockchain, where we recently issued a call for research specifically on blockchain uses for social and economic equity in agriculture and food supply chains. So if anyone's interested in that, please get in touch and I'm happy to share.
Thanks, Alicia. Welcome.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Bobby. I'm the chair of the Learning Materials Working Group for Hyperledger. I also run a company called Ledger Academy. And this summer we did a social impact project called the BC Blockchain and the Giving Chain.
Sean Wilborn. I'm a 3L law student here at the University of Miami in South Florida. And I'll be presenting today on Lid Vision, which is a company that I founded recently. And I'll discuss a little bit about that in a little bit, and then as well as a couple of waste-related projects that I'm working on.
Hi, my name is Junji. I work for Itaú Unibanco. It's a Brazilian bank. I'm part of the emerging technologies team, assessing on how to use blockchain, AI, cognitive technologies, and other emerging technologies across the several units within our bank. And most recently, we have been engaging with our sustainability team as well. So very interested on how we can use and leverage blockchain aligned with our sustainability efforts.
Welcome, thank you.
Yes, hi, this is Mark Liberati. I'm policy specialist at the United Nations Volunteer Program, which is the focal point for volunteerism within the UN and is administered by UNDP. I'm also involved in the UN Innovation Network and our working group here on frontier technologies, including blockchain, AI, big data. And I've been participating throughout last year in this segment. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks. I think that is everyone. Please holler out if there's anyone missing. So just quickly running through a couple of the administrative things, and today we also have Sean, who will be discussing his project. One of the first things to highlight is the Hyperledger Diversity, Civility, and Inclusion Working Group. They actually just released a survey, really trying to get a baseline of the Hyperledger community members. So if you guys have some, a few minutes, please fill out the survey. It's actually available on our meeting agenda. The next thing is the New Mecklenburg Guide. So one of the projects that as a group, we talked about in the beginning of this year was developing a centralized location where any new members who is interested in joining the SIG can quickly get a good summary of what we've been working on and find ways that they can jump in and help out. So Bobby and her group have developed essentially a template for a new member welcome page. And I will be taking a stab at that, and I will be releasing a draft outline of the different areas over the next 2 weeks. So just be on the lookout for that. And if you guys are interested in helping out, that would be definitely greatly appreciated. Even if you guys are just, you know, interested in kind of reading through it and finding different areas, especially if you are a new member, we really want to kind of make sure that it has the right focus and the right content within it. So those are definitely a couple of different areas. The next thing is one of the items, which is identifying different community members that would be interested in speaking communities. So we definitely have a lot of opportunities and we get reached out to every now and then. Give folks a list of people who would be interested in speaking at different events. So if you guys are interested in opportunities like that, if you go to our SIG directory, we actually have the names of most of our community members. And right here we have an area where you can select if you're open to speaking opportunities. But for those that are new, please do put your name down in here just so that we are aware of who everyone is in the community. And that way we can always reach out when an opportunity does arise. So it would be a great opportunity to kind of really spell out your brand and speak about the different projects that you are working on. Moving on to the next thing, which is connecting with community member presenters. One of the other things that we had discussed in the beginning of the year for 2020 is we have a list of different community presenters who have presented in the past year. One of the things that would be interesting would be to reach out to them and update on the various blockchain projects that they've been working on. So that's something that I know Jim said that he wanted to lead. And if anyone else is also interested in doing so, we do have a list of all the community presenters also available on our wiki page. So if you go right here, we have community presentations. And here are a list of the different presenters that have presented in the past. And if you guys have any questions in terms of, getting the contact information for some of them, definitely reach out to me or reach out to one of the different community members that are also on this call. Any questions before I move on to the second half? So one of the other things that was discussed in the beginning of the year is creating a consolidated SIG page for consolidating all the different types of social impact resources. Essentially trying to put together a list or different various links as well as any kind of research paper within this field. And it could be about use cases, best practices, or something that's a little bit more technical. But definitely a way that different community members can come here as a area to find different types of information that could help with their projects. We have a couple folks that have identified that they're interested in helping out with this effort. So if anyone else is interested, please do sign your name up. And I do believe that we already have a page in here. So if you go to the SIG workstreams and projects and community liaison, we have the SIG member page, still a little bit empty, and we also have here the use cases and best practices, and we'll probably add that resource within this project. One of the other things for folks that are looking to or are already planning to attend the Hyperledger Global Forum, so there are going to be a couple different opportunities for SIG members to participate in addition to listening to all the great presentations that will be available. One of the things is the opportunity for a special interest group kiosk. So there will be different time blocks available at the Hyperledger booth for SIG members and different SIGs. So if we do get a quorum of different folks, it might be a great way to kind of get together. We can engage as a community as well as reach out to other folks to see if we can recruit some more folks to our community. And if you go back to kind of our wiki page, we do have an area right here under community liaison to essentially just put down your name and your contact information if you are planning or not planning to, if you're planning to attend the Hyperledger Global Forum. We have had some folks say that unfortunately they're unable to attend the Hyperledger Global Forum, but that they still want to help out. So, you know, you're welcome to put your name even if you aren't planning to attend and just interested in helping out and setting up the event. One of the other opportunities that will be available for the Global Forum is a kind of a birds of a feather meeting. Essentially, for all the SIG members that will be attending, it would be a great way for us to all meet in person. While it's great that we get to meet bi-weekly virtually, I'm sure the sentiment that could be shared is that everyone would be, it would be nice to see everyone in person for once. So yeah, so if anyone is interested, anyone's thinking about it, please, we definitely highly encourage you to put your name down in on the SIG page, and then we can start kind of crafting how we want to organize the two different ways that we can kind of meet together as a community. Any questions for any of the administrative items before we move on? Is there anything else that anyone wants to add?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, my name is Vinod. I'm very new to the community. I'm like, this is my first call, and I'm a PhD student. I'm doing my research in the blockchain and its social interaction, like how the human can interact with this technology and what impact this technology has. So this is my very first meeting, and I'm also attending the Hyperledger Forum. So I was interested, but I have no idea. This is like my first exposure to this. So I just wanted, like, can I still participate and join the kiosk or like bird of feather meeting or any such things?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. First off, welcome. We didn't catch you in the beginning of the introduction. So welcome to the group. In terms of different opportunities, it's just participating in the future next couple calls, and we'll definitely kind of scope out a little bit of different areas of things to work on. But I think the main thing is getting your perspective from a new member, how we can better engage with the different community members and really help you bring you on board, especially as we do the group kiosk and in-person meetings. We'll anticipate a lot of folks dropping in and dropping by. So if you can bring that perspective, that would be greatly helpful. And we'll look forward to getting you more involved in this.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions, concerns, new activities that we should be considering? Okay, great. So moving on to the community updates. So we had a couple of different events that happened since our last call. One of them was Blockchain for Social Good, exploring emerging cryptocurrency technologies. I don't know if anyone on the call attended this. But we also had the Philadelphia Diversity and Blockchain Conference, as well as the Government Blockchain Association Conference. Did anyone attend these conferences?
Hi, it's Bobby. I actually attended both.
Great. Can you give us a bit of an update on how it was?
Sure. The Diversity in Blockchain in Philadelphia conference was the first one. It was the opening of their a division. So the Diversity in Blockchain is basically all around the United States. This is the first time Philadelphia opened their chapter. They basically were focusing on law. So they had a panel just discussing ramifications of the California privacy laws on certain blockchain initiatives. It was a good start for them. A lot of people attended and it was really nice. The other event was the Government Blockchain Association down in DC. And I have to say that was fabulous. Thanks to this group and the associations I've made here, I don't know if everybody knows, but most people on the call know that I tried to do a social impact project with a lot of the meetup groups in my area. And we actually won the award for social impact at the event in DC. So that was really quite exceptional for us, me and my team.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. It was fun, I'll tell you that much. I never won anything before in my life. So that with the two events. And the Government Blockchain Association, that's a huge event trying to get all government agencies involved in blockchain. So it was held at the Congressional Auditorium at the Capitol. And they did have a lot of political people wandering in and out and asking good questions. So they're getting a good start down there as well.
Great. So, Bobby, do you have like a picture or something you could share? We would love to kind of highlight that on the wiki page.
Oh, hold on. Let me see if I can maneuver this here. Let me see. Hold on. Yeah, I'll put it up there. I have a link to the project page. If I'll put it in the chat if anybody wants to go see the actual pictures from the day. So I'll put that link in the chat.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
So the so in terms of the upcoming events, so like we mentioned before, there will be the Hyperledger Global Forum, which will take place between March 3rd to the 6th in Phoenix, Arizona. There's also going to be the Blockchain Revolution Global, which is between April 7th to the 8th in Toronto, Canada. Are there any other blockchain events that you guys, you know, anyone within the community is planning to attend or looking at? This could be a great way to just kind of highlight that a little bit so that, you know, other folks who are interested but don't, you know, weren't aware of these conferences could come and, you know what is up and coming. Are there anything?
Not that I know of.
All right, great. So if you guys ever, if you guys do come across another conference or another meeting or something local, you know, please feel free to come and edit our meeting agenda change. This way, like we said before, it's a great way to highlight different conferences and so that anyone within the community can hear about them. So are there any other topics or anything else that anyone wants to discuss before we move to the community presentation? Okay, great. So Sean, what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna make you also a host, and I think that should allow you to start sharing the screen and let me know if there's any hiccups on that end.
Okay, I got it. Let me see here. Do multiple participants. Okay. Now, can you currently see my screen? Hello?
I can't see it.
We can't yet, Sean.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see here. Enter full screen. Share. Okay. Share. All right. How about now?
Nope. Not yet.
Yeah, now I can see the U.S. recycling system is garbage.
Yes. Is there another button for sharing with everyone? Is there?
Now I see it. It
got it, Sean. Over. Good stuff.
Okay. All right. Sorry about that. Okay. So everybody can see the first slide there.
Yes.
All right.
Yep, I guess.
Okay, perfect, perfect, awesome. So what I'm going to do is I want to do a little bit of background about waste in general, the market, and then sort of discuss some of the environmental impacts. And then I want to turn and focus on the project itself that we're working on, as well as some community projects that we're also engaged with, and how I think blockchain sort of can be applied in this context. Now, you know, full disclosure, I'm the blockchain expert. I'm the least knowledgeable on the topic that's in this room, but it's sort of my perspective on how we might be able to implement it into our systems, as well as some gaps that the blockchain can really fill when it comes to trust. So without further ado, I'll go ahead and jump right in. So and this is sort of the industry, if you will, sort of the unknown $75 billion industry. As you see, you got oil and gas in the middle, and these numbers, these numbers are actually increased, right? So it says 75 billion here. I think it's at about 90 billion. But nonetheless, you can see it in comparison with the oil and gas industries, as well as film and entertainment, right? You would think that that would be a larger industry than trash, but there's actually a lot of dollars flowing back and forth when it comes to waste. And if you, and I think everyone does, you know, if you're in an apartment or if you're in a residential unit, you know, you pay monthly for trash, whether it's $25 or $50 or $30. And this is sort of the breakdown of what those funds go to, right? 55% is for collection, actually coming out and picking up in the trucks there. And then 20% would be the treatment and disposal, which is either in the landfill, or we're talking about the incinerator, or potentially the recycling facility. And lastly is the remediation portion. And that's really focused on cleanup efforts, if you will. When we dive into the environmental impacts, you know, lawsuits and all that, all those ordeals that stem from those environmental concerns. Now, the reason I put this slide up is because the first on the left side, you sort of see the typical trash schedule is a repetitive schedule that is the same typically, you know, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, my trash truck comes around and it hits every single home, regardless of whether we have a full receptacle or not. And then there was actually a study done in China that found that this was one of the most inefficient ways to actually collect the trash in the first place. And so there's been a big shift to break apart from this scheduled route and sort of implement a more hub-based approach, which essentially means, you know, you put your cart out when it's full, and they'll have a IoT sensor on the cart, which we'll dive into later, but you'll have a little sensor on the cart that says it's out. And so the truck would only come to the homes or apartments where the carts are out versus every single place. And so that's sort of a shift that we've seen sort of occurring in Asia, not as much in the US. And then on the right side, you see that these trucks are getting, you know, 3 miles a gallon diesel fuel, and they're dispatching every day, right? And so that's a big impact from a transportation environmental standpoint. And when we're talking about greenhouse gas pollution and climate change, figuring out a way to efficiently move these vehicles around and in some cases substitute them out for electric vehicles, in other cases, trying to improve the efficiencies around the transportation in general. And then also, I know I mentioned before about the collection, you know, 55% being in the collection, but these are just some statistics about fatalities. And as you see in 2017, that's upward of 132 recorded fatalities. And now we're in the interesting number is that 94 of those people were actually people in the public, right? And so those were actually either pedestrians, bikers, walkers, someone in their vehicle. They were actually struck by a collection company. And so collection has been one of the most sort of underswept issues when it comes to, you know, from a transportation impact, from a health perspective, as well as from just overall fatalities from these large, massive vehicles moving around in tight facilities and tight corners. And now I want to turn to the environmental impacts. And this is really sort of tailored towards the landfills and sort of the incinerators that have the, whether it's contaminated drinking water, acid rain, which is essentially rain coming down on top of a landfill, and then it takes all of those contents, all of those bacteria and chemicals that are in the landfill, and essentially washes it to the bottom of the landfill. It leaks out of the clay barrier at the bottom and contaminates local groundwater and drinking water. And then lawsuits often stem up from that. And here's an example of one organization, the Conservation Law Foundation. And you know what their big approach is that there's really no safe landfill, right? You can take all these precautions to put plastic down and build these clay barriers and try to implement whatever protocols it may be or whatever regulations that are required. But at the end of the day, there's still going to be, you know, massive amounts of chemicals that get into the ground in these communities' water supplies. And that's why they see higher rates of cancer, higher rates of diseases that are sort of located in the vicinities of the of these landfills. And then again, this is just reiterating that they're further down in their article, you know, no landfill is safe. And so how are we going to start diverting all of these materials from the landfill? How are we going to increase recycling? How are we going to increase food waste reduction or reduce food from ending up in the landfill in the first place? Because food and these organics contribute to the methane gas that's released into the atmosphere from the landfills. And I think there was a study in 2019 that discussed that. I think it was out of California, talking about how landfills were one of the highest, I think it was top three in different industry sectors as far as methane releasing areas is landfills in general. And so this is just a broader example, not necessarily focused specifically on landfills, but you do see it over there on the right side, but it gives you sort of a picture of what sort of cities look like, different environments, and how that groundwater gets contaminated. And I always come back to that water portion, because that's where, when we're talking about trash, we see it all in the oceans, all in the different rivers and streams, but it's also just seeping through the ground itself, right? Depending on what materials, what pesticides, what chemicals are out there. And sliding to the next one. And so this is actually I'm sure many of you are familiar with the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. You know, it's off the out in the Pacific, the biggest landfill on the globe, more than twice the size of Texas. Just massive amounts of garbage and trash that are floating in our waters. You know, killing species. You see on the news all the time. There's different animals, fish, birds that their bellies are full of plastic and full of these different materials that people are tossing out. In the background there, that's actually Mount Trashmore. So this is, you know, these different landfills, they'll try to, you know, spark up some sort of a catchy name for the landfill to try to cover up essentially all the crap that's in there. And so this one is called Mount Trashmore. But as you can see, just a bunch of random plastic items. You can see different paint buckets and different chemical buckets and containers. And that's part of the reason why when the water hits it, it hits those chemical residue and chemical leftovers, and it just starts seeping down through the ground there. And then what does this do, right? This is causing huge amounts of confusion, right? Because if you're a resident or you're a citizen and you're depositing your recycling, you're thinking you're doing it correctly, and then you find out that a company was taking it to the landfill or they were taking it to the waste to energy facility instead of actually recycling it. And then also you have these questions in your head. You know, I'm going up to the receptacle. I have this bottle in my hand. Do I have to rinse it out first? Does it go in this container? Does my paper go in here as well? Or should I put my water bottle and my paper in the same one? I'm not really sure. You know, so there's a big amount of confusion, particularly in the U.S., right? Other nations are doing a lot better, right? Germany, Sweden, Japan. We can try to mimic some of what they have. But what they have is top-down legislation. And so here in the U.S., everyone's confused because in the example I use is South Florida. There's 26 municipalities in Miami-Dade County. And of those 26 municipalities, everyone recycles something different. Everybody's bins look different. Everybody's carts look different. You got different colors, different requirements, things that you don't accept. And it changes on a monthly basis, right? So there's a massive amount of confusion. And my theory is that, you know, it definitely can be focused on, be solved with some top-down federal legislation. And so that's sort of the environmental bucket. sector and sort of just a little bit on the market. And did anybody have any questions about, I went through that kind of quickly, but did anybody have any questions about the environmental side, any of those impacts before I dive into the project and how I think blockchain can sort of assist in this regard? Okay. All right. Seeing none, moving forward. So Lid Vision, I started this entity essentially formed in December of 2019, but I've been researching these issues for about 2 years now, really focusing on waste and the recycling markets and how, where are the gaps? Where's the most room for improvement? And so what I decided was that my focus was going to be on the receptacle lids themselves, because that's where I saw people depositing, right? So you actually, if you have a bottle or some sort of can in your hand, you go up to a receptacle and you put it inside of a container, or you put it inside the receptacle itself. And so my theory is that if we can formulate lids to adapt across the board, to whether they be restrictive, whether they be smart lids, and whether they have cameras on them, whatever it may be, that the lids and being at the source should actually be the main focus. And so the current way that, and so I guess this is a little bit of background, when China shut their doors on recyclables and imports, there was a massive amount of confusion and scramble to try to figure out what to do. And then we're blaming the residents because they're not doing it correctly, but we never really taught them how to do it correctly in the first place because we were just shipping our crap out of the country and everybody was turning a blind eye. And so what we're seeing here in this image is the government's response to recycling contamination is to go out bin by bin, manually check whether people are recycling. And if they aren't doing it correctly, what they do is they leave a little tag and they leave it on the cart and say, okay, you got a $50 fine or $100 fine, you know, whatever it may be. But obviously this process, you only get a small sample. It's very inefficient. And I'll use an example for Miami-Dade County. What they do is they serve 350,000 residents. And of those 350,000, they did a sample of 1,000 of them. And that was when they went out and tagged 1,000 different bins, right? Very expensive process. You only get a very, very small sample. And then in addition to that, it's only a one-time thing, right? So you leave the tag, and then what? You're supposed to come back every week to do that? And so what we figured, and this is an example of Miami-Dade County's fee increase, is because what happens is the haulers who actually pick up the recycling, they say, look, the markets are bad. We don't know what to do. And so what we're going to do is we're going to charge people more for picking up their stuff because they're not doing it correctly, right? And that's just a sample of just one government. Now, they've done this across the board, across the nation. They've either increased fees, canceled programs, or they're just, which means they're essentially sending everything to the landfill in that canceled program context. Now, why is the recycling sort of in a funk, right? If we have plastic bags that get into the recycling bin, ultimately they're going to end up here, right? And so this is called a MRF, or material recovery facility. And if you notice, you know, there's plastic bags that are all intertangled in the machinery, and they shut these and they shut down the entire facility 3-4 times a day, just so these cleaners, if you see on the right side, can go in, pull out the bags, untangle the wires, and it completely shuts down operations. And so now you can sort of see why the government and these different entities are like, look, it's more expensive for us to go in through and recycle it. We're just going to take it to the landfill because that's the cheaper option. And so the question becomes, how can we avoid this situation, and how can we create some clarity? And so although this says waste audits, this sort of solution metric is, it can apply across the board, which means, you know, before you take any step forward into implementing a solution, you need to figure out what is the current state, right? What is the, you know, you have to do a comprehensive audit of what are the materials that are coming out of a certain area. And so the original way to do this, and I've done about 4 or 5 of these trash audits. And let me tell you, it's a stinky process. You go in, you take a small sample, you're opening up these garbage bags. You have no idea what's in there. You got these big gloves on, you got a suit, like a space suit on, just to try to protect yourself from whatever's going to splatter out.
and you know, these reeking smells and old waste, old food, rotten food, and you know, bugs everywhere, maggots and all that stuff. So it's obviously not a good process, and you only really get a small sample. You can't do the, you can't do an entire building, let alone a county or a municipality. And so the way that we see it is that if we, and this is sort of our technology that we want to bring to the table, is that if you look on the left side, that's the lid itself, and then our technology is going to be underneath the lid. And so we're actually on version, I think, 1.3 of the lid design, the prototype that we're working with. And I have a engineer that I'm working with, mechanical and electrical engineers, that are helping me develop the lid for functionality purposes. And so basically how we're going to address the issue is by identifying materials as soon as they enter into the receptacle. And so what's going to happen is, as you drop something in, it'll take an image of it, and that image gets sent to a database. Once it's at the database, it'll get analyzed with the machine learning model. And then what we do is we actually can take that image. You can also put it onto a chain, depending on the circumstances, right? So you can either do all of the images, you can do certain images, and you can put those as a verification process as it goes through that recycling chain, right? So it's in the receptacle, and then it's in a truck, and then it's at a station, and then it gets sold to a purchaser. And so the reason that we think and we put so much emphasis on the lid itself is because that's where people are depositing the materials. And so in the middle, that middle image, that's more of like a stylish, you know, indoor model where you have stainless steel, you know, not the outdoor plastic, but the indoor. And so we're still tweaking that. Obviously, it's changed since now, or changed since this image. But and then on the far right side, we sort of see the different variations of lids that can be implemented. You can have them on the carts. You can have them at the middle one is like for events in larger facilities where someone's pushing it around and depositing bottles and cans into the receptacle. And then lastly, you have the dumpster, right? If you're going to collect a bunch of bottles from an apartment complex, you just have this dumpster down there. People come over, they can either punch in a PIN code or whatever it may be, and they can deposit in their bottle. And now what they can do is on that dumpster model is, and I've seen this before in the and this is in the blockchain context, is you punch in some sort of identifier, whether it's a PIN code or something, and then once you deposit your bottle, you receive some token in exchange, or you receive something of value in exchange, and then you can go on and, you know, go spend that at such and such store, something that credits that that token, or you can exchange it, right? And so that's sort of a different model from using blockchain in itself. Now, that's on the user side. So what I will say, and this might be a little forward thinking, you know, because we're still trying to develop it, but is a fully autonomous receptacle that communicates with another receptacle and says, hey, I have half of, you know, I'm about half full when it comes to aluminum cans. I see that you are about 25%. So why don't you, your receptacle B, come over to receptacle A, empty yourself into me, and then I'll just go empty ourselves into the dumpster, right? And so that's a fully autonomous set of transactions that can occur. And I don't know much about it, but IOTA Chain is one that does, I think it's feeless microtransactions. And so that's where I think that from an IoT perspective, we can really use IOTA. And then once you have all of those materials in that dumpster, in that larger receptacle, you can take images there and you can actually put those on the Hyperledger fabric or the in purchaser to see the different material chains that are coming to them. And then this is essentially just what the market is expected to do, expected to jump. As you see, 2017 is sort of in that light blue, and you see the dark blue by 2025. And this is really just based on consumption, population increase, people having more access to capital, being able to spend more, being able to buy more things. And so we see that not only, you know, hazardous waste has a small jump, but that municipal waste and that construction and industrial waste, those are going to boom. And so the question is, what are we going to do with this different waste? Is it going to go to the landfill? Is it going to go to the incinerator? Are we going to have more effective data collection at the source, right? And so that's our big thing, right? It's trying to eliminate contamination at the source so that once this municipal waste jumps, that we're going to be able to address that and it's not all going to go to the landfill. A few of our competitors in the industry, they do on the left side, those are more of a smart bin, smart receptacle style model that they implement. And then on the right side, you see Tamra. They're big in IR and sensors and different lasers that they sell to the recycling facilities. And they also do reverse vending machines. So they don't have any here in Florida. I think they're implementing a couple here and there, but I know in the Northeast they're big, out West they're big. You know, on a global scale, there are, I think Germany has them, Sweden has them, these reverse vending machines where you go up to it, you deposit it, and you receive something of value for your recycling. And then Compology, they do something similar when they're talking about dumpsters and camera-based dumpsters. And then Rubicon, they're actually a billion-dollar valuation right now, but they're more on the collection side, you know, smart collection. So going back to that schedule that I showed you earlier, typically you just dispatch a vehicle and it hits all these different points. And then that's a repeated schedule. But Rubicon, they're trying to take a different approach. Say, hey, look, this is how you can efficiently go out and pick up these different bins, only pick them up when they're full. And oh, yeah, we have some AI as well that you can tie in. So this is really our competitive advantage. We're trying to separate ourselves and use these use sort of machine learning at the source to try to identify these materials and then not allow them to go into the recycling facility if they have a plastic bag in it, right? So we can identify that before it gets to that point. And thus, you know, whether it's a person or a robot going in and pulling out that plastic bag and putting it in the trash so it doesn't contaminate those other materials. And then when I talk about the innovative network, that's really discussing that that larger blockchain network where people can transact based on the images that are coming in. How can they verify some of these contents? And this is an example from an innovative network standpoint. Previously, when China and India and these different countries were receiving recycling, so-called recycling, what would happen is people would take a bunch of garbage and they would dress it up as recycling. And so when the purchaser says, hey, I know you have 10 tons of recycling, whatever material it is, can you send me images? They send them the images and then the purchaser, okay, send that on over. And then once it gets there, they open it up and they're like, okay, this is a bunch of garbage, right? And so that's another example of where blockchain can come in and say, okay, what is every single piece of material that's in here? I can see that before it even gets to me. And then I can verify that there's not actually garbage coming to me. And that's how a lot of the garbage ends up into the water. I think there was a study that said 97% of all the materials and garbage that are in the water are from Asia. That was their statement. But the biggest issue there is that the U.S. is one of the biggest consumers in the globe, right? 60% of plastic bottles in the globe come from the U.S. But what happens is we ship it over to developing countries and they don't have the infrastructure necessary to handle the amount of materials that we're depositing. And so what happens is they end up tossing it in the water. It ends up polluting their own environment. And because they don't have that architecture, they don't have that infrastructure necessary to deal with these circumstances. And so that's Lid Vision. And so this is actually Cortada Projects. Now I'm shifting to a political citizen engagement discussion here. And so Cortada Projects, the project we're working on is called Trash Talk. And what we've done is we've teamed up with Miami-Dade County. And the theory behind this is that we're going to take a bunch of orange check marks, about 7,500 to start with, and we're going to go door to door. Obviously, we're going to recruit some people, but we're going to be going door to door, talking with people about recycling. We're going to take these orange check marks, and once someone knows how to recycle right, which means they watch a video, they answer a question, okay, you can recycle right, then we take the orange check mark and we stick it on the recycling bin, just a way to sort of stir up the discussion, like, okay, yes, you can recycle right. All right, and now that we're in the door, oh, by the way, you know that you can reduce your consumption by doing this. Oh, you know, these are alternatives to what you're doing. And so we try to use recycling to get in the door, use trash talk as a catchy term to try to get people discussing trash in general, and then start to have that further discussion. Because trash and debris. I mean, it really is a legislative battle. There's lots of money. I know on the right side, you see, I got the waste management gear on. I in no way, shape, or form endorse them. You know, it's just for security measures while we were in there. But it's a very political game when you're discussing trash and who controls the different territories and where the material's coming from and where it's going and who's disposing of it. And as you see in that picture on the right, if you look behind us, all of that material is going to the landfill. So we're at a recycling facility, and all of this trash piled up behind us is actually, you know, it's going to end up going to the landfill. And while we were there at the recycling facility, this entire facility, it seemed barren. Like, it seemed like a lot of this material, and they're supposed to take it for the entire county. This is a 2.9 million population county. It's a very large county, but it didn't seem like there was that many materials there, because what'll happen is they'll eyeball their truckload and say, oh, you know, this, although this is a recycling truck, I'm looking at it and it looks like it's about, you know, 65% good. And so it's got a lot of contaminants in it. So let's just go ahead and send it straight to the landfill. We're not going to sort this one out. And so that's the cheaper method than sending it back through that image that I showed earlier, where people have to go back in and pull out all the crap, all the trash, all the garbage, et cetera. And so here, this is just a simple image of what we're doing. On the left side, we're sort of working with the county to try to figure out the best method of the checkmark placement, how we're going to set up these carts to really educate people how to recycle right. And then on the right side is this Pinecrest Gardens, where we're installation. We're going to put up some different banners and flyers and these different receptacles. And and while I'm here on the blockchain topic, I will say that one method that countries are, not the US, one method that other countries are using is using blockchain for permitting and licensing. So actually taking an efficient way and, you know, taking all that paperwork and extra time out of the process of getting a permit and a license for people to go in and recycle. They put that on blockchain network and it expedites the process. So that's another element of where blockchain is being used in the recycling realm. And yeah, that's it. I know it was pretty quick, but you know, if you guys have any questions or concerns, you know, feel free to give me a shout. Obviously it's sort of a little Q&A, a large discussion. So I'm open for questions. Anyone?
Hi, it's Bobby. I just want to say thank you for the presentation. It was eye-opening for me. I've, you know, attempted to try to figure out my own township's recycling sometimes, and it's hair-pulling. And I love the idea of the IoT device on the lid. It is fabulous. So thank you for presenting.
Thank you very much for having me.
And my only other question is, are you finding like the communities buying into this rapidly, or are, like, I know Miami-Dade is, but do you see it replicating in other counties?
It is. And the big reason is because municipalities are having the most to lose right now, because they're the ones that are paying for the citizens to recycle. And so the contract that the municipalities have is largely with private haulers, right? So they outsource a lot of this so the private haulers can come and pick up the recycling and dispose of it and then resell it, right? Because there has to be a market for the recyclables. And so across the nation, and this is why it's been talked about in the media so much, is because municipalities, they're getting strong-armed by these haulers, and the haulers are, you know, it used to be $30 a ton, and now they're bumping the recycling up to $60 a ton just to come and pick it up. So that's why they're either canceling the programs, they're going out and launching these massive education campaigns, and it's really a big political battle, and we're going to see a lot of contracts being either changed going forward to address contamination, or move away from a collection method to a drop-off only recycling area. And so I see it across the U.S. Now, what I will say is that Canada and Sweden and Germany, these other places, they already have great infrastructure necessary to deal with it, right? They have multiple streams. You know, you have to separate your paper from your bottles and your bottles from your cardboard and whatever it may be. But here in Miami-Dade and in a lot of other places that waste management services or waste collection services, the big waste companies, when they service the area, they like to do single stream, because they believe that it's easier to sort out on the back end. And so we've adapted to that system. And once that happened, and then we realized that China stopped accepting our recyclables and that there's no market for all of these materials, then we got shot in the foot because we've been so adapt to doing it in a certain way that actually increases in contamination versus separating at the source, which will ultimately lead to more valuable and pure commodities in the market. So I guess to answer your question, it's happening in Miami-Dade County, but it's also happening across the U.S. from a recycling program standpoint, a cost efficiency standpoint. And then from on a global scale, you know, there's other nations that are doing it a lot better, but they also have that top-down legislation. And so until the U.S. has that top-down legislation, there's going to be a lot of confusion, a lot of different contracts and different materials being collected.
Well, the confusion you're talking about, we were multi-stream in my township in New Jersey, and then we went to single stream. Mm. So, and now we're still at single stream. So now I'm like thinking, is this a really good idea? Should I...
Well, and that's the big thing. There's a contract coming up, and this is part of my research, is pulling different contracts from all these municipalities and looking at them and seeing what are the terms and what are some of the different price points that we can try to bring some value. But here in Miami-Dade County, for instance, there's a contract coming up in 2021, 2022, and it's for single stream recycling. And so the question is, are these communities and these different grassroots organizers going to be informed enough to make the legislative push to say, look, we want a dual stream back. We want to be able to not only be able to separate some of these materials, but we also want to make sure that it's not going to the landfill. Because that's one of the most demoralizing things when I've spoken with people and been out in the community, you know, teaming up with the local Sierra Club organization, Democratic Environmental Caucus, these different environmental groups. When I go out and speak with them, you know, one of their biggest concerns is, well, Sean, you know, I tried to recycle right, but it seems like my stuff's going to the landfill. And that really upsets people. And it upsets me too. But until we get to a point where we can verify at the source and say, okay, this is what material's here, and then we track it and say, okay, now the material's there, and now the materials, that's the end destination, and now you get your incentive for whatever it is for doing it correctly. So we have those processes and that infrastructure and architecture in place, then there's really not going to be much trust, right? Because that's what a lot of people are doing. They just lose trust in the system, and they're like, screw it. It might go to the landfill. I'm just going to put it in.
Yes, thank you very much.
No problem. Anybody else?
Yeah, this is Mark Liberati. I was actually, I'm in, UNV is based actually in Bonn, Germany. So you mentioned the German mull trend, as they call it, which is like the separation of trash. It struck a chord. But so I do see the benefit in general of having that disaggregated before you're going to go ahead with this, because I think it would probably make the censoring and the what you're trying to measure probably easier if it's not all mixed together. But I was actually, the question was more on data privacy. Mm-hmm. and just thinking in the U.S. context, sort of your Fourth Amendment rights, like, so what data is going to be collected that's attaching to the individual as to what they're throwing out? Because there is sort of, although under U.S. law, there's not always so much privacy, expectation of privacy attached to what goes in the garbage. But if you're having sensors there, you know, like you said, if you want to have this fine system where you can automate that very quickly, right, which would create massive disincentive, but also does touch upon people's privacy, and then that you might then create a disincentive to then participate if you're creating lots of trash, for example. So I'm just curious how you find that balance.
Right. Now, and that's a great point, because and even when I've pitched this previously, that's one of the main points that we bring up is that when we're trying to address this sort of issue and this sort of circulation, if we frame it as we're putting devices on your lids to find you, then that's not really easily to sell that. But if you can frame it more in the incentive base, then you can say, okay, we just want to verify that you're doing it right. You can take the images yourself if you want to. You don't have to have the device on, or you can have a drop-off location where you can come and you can drop these items off. But from a privacy standpoint, if you have sensitive documents, you should be shredding those anyways. And from a garbage standpoint, once you put it in your receptacle and on your street, you're essentially leaving it out to the public so that, the police could come by and search it, whatever it may be. So there's different case law that's behind that. And that can be, the Fourth Amendment right here. You're exactly right. Unreasonable search and seizure, but there is case law on from a U.S. standpoint about putting things into the public and sort of not having them. Now, not necessarily not having them, but sort of putting them out there. I guess for identifying and you love Heineken and you don't want anybody to know that you love Heineken, and you're full of Heineken bottles. But you don't want your work or somebody else to know. That's a big issue as far as, being able to have secure data that either maybe the government has all this data on you about what you're recycling. And so the issue that we're running into is trying to figure out how we can create value by saying, okay, look, you have these 25 Heineken bottles, you 25% off your next Heineken purchase if you deposit it here and there's an image taken. So I think it's really going to be an educational and communication approach. And then being able to say that we're not leveraging and selling your data. Although, that's likely what happens 9 times out of 10 is you get all these images and you sell them to these big companies, targeted advertising and whatever it may be. Privacy is obviously a big concern. And even if we got away from taking images and we just use different sensors to detect the materials, so maybe we just pay you based on aluminum versus Coca-Cola. So we just pay you based on your aluminum can recycling percentage. So that's a way to approach the scenarios, do it based on a material and a weight perspective versus the Heineken or the Coca-Cola per se. Itself. So you just have your container full of aluminum cans, and as long as it's aluminum only in there, you'll get your coupon for these 10 different companies that have aluminum cans. And then that's another approach outside of the camera only kind.
Thank you so much, Sean, for the presentation today. We're just 2 minutes over the our time block. If you guys have any more questions, Sean, would it be all right if folks reached out to you directly?
Yes, for sure. Yeah, more than willing, Yeah, so happy to talk.
Awesome, sounds great. So we'll be sharing Sean's slides on our meeting agenda, and we'll also be sending out his contact information for folks that are interested. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, everyone. Have a great day.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.